for joining us. I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm. And today we are going over Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay, sorry. There's going to be a lot of that throughout this entire podcast. And we hope that you enjoy that because we enjoy doing this for you.
Yes. But to start off our show here at Shocked and Applaud, I wanted to say thank you to our new applauders. And here, guys, there is no sarcasm in my voice when I tell you we have 4 applauders, and I'm really psyched about it because that means that 4 of you were like, I'm going to put my hand into my pocket and support the creation of media of 2 ladies talking smack about some really fine films. And I mean, it's a pleasure to be able to do something that I love and have people listen to it and think, well, that is fairly amusing. I also agree. Or if at any point you're like, why are they laughing so hard? Did she just yuck into the
We find ourselves very entertaining, which, I mean, I know I'm a huge narcissist, so that makes sense for me.
I mean, if you're not a narcissist, I mean, okay, here's the thing, though. I have this strict belief that there's 2 sides of almost every coin, right? If you were to define, I'm getting philosophical and it's only minute 1.
Please.
Okay. But here's the thing. I once had a sin defined to me as something good used for an evil purpose, right? So whereas you might say, oh, I'm narcissistic because I like this piece of art that I make. You might also say, I make art that I like to share with people. And I enjoy doing it with this other person. And also, other people seem to like it. At least, like, $4 or $5 a month applauders like it. Like, I'm getting $20. I mean, we're going to pour that right back into ad services, but like the idea of being able to be like, no, it's not just my own personal stroking. Nope. It's my own personal stroking of my own ego. It's people genuinely being interested in something that we are actively doing.
Right.
If you are a narcissist, you're on the right side of the coin of narcissism. You're not like, and another thing, you better like my podcast or you're an idiot. It's like, you like my podcast. Did you hear the thing about when we were like, and 5 is right out? And we both laughed for like 3 minutes. And that was just so good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't downplay you, because I love the fact that we get to share some ridiculousness with some people who understand. Exactly that.
Yeah. And when you get like 4 people who are willing to, you know, shell out money every month, it's just sort of like, at this point, I think we're professionals.
You know what? Here's the thing. We are paid artists now. Mm-hmm. No lie. And mm-hmm. if you're like, oh, okay, they're like shilling for my $5. No, I'm shilling for like the $1 as well. But also, if you're just listening, that's great. If you give us a review, that's great. Like, we have this page attached to Shocked and Applaud on Facebook called Angels and Unicorns. And when you become an applauder, or you become a Patreon on any level, or you mention us in media, if you boost us up in any way, we add you to that page. And you kind of get these, oh, this is when this special thing is coming out. And this is us, like, telling an inside joke to some friends of ours. And we want to welcome you into that community. And Patreon is how you kind of get in there. But even if you're not, if you're just like a casual listener and you happen to be listening to us rant like some NPR fundraising BS right this second, like, just know that it's because we love you. And we want to tell you that as little hometown mom and pop shop, tiny little podcast in the middle of Tacoma, like far from you, close to you, obscure from you or near and dear to you, we appreciate the dickens out of you, random person who I don't know if you're my mother who might not listen but gives to the Patreon, or to Christine who listens fondly not 2 towns over. Like, just y'all are fantastic, and we had to take a second at the beginning of this episode to let you know.
We want to appreciate you, and we want you to feel appreciated, even if all you're doing is just listening to the podcast. Mm-hmm. We thank you.
Yes, sincerely and genuinely. And so I hope that when you saw the thumbnail drop and you saw that we were going to do a Little Shop of Horrors, you were like, oh, no. oh, no, in like the best of ways.
Right.
That's what the title Shocked and Applaud is all about. You're like, oh, no, this is going to be amazing. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
But you have to know.
Yes. I mean, we've been doing this since like what, September?
It was August.
Yeah, August of 2018.
Like the better part of a year.
Yeah.
I've been following pages that are like, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I'm like, okay, all right. And to be fair, Jonathan's done a lot of the running.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the fun bit, the getting to record and the getting to listen to the episodes bit, that I get to share that with you is like, it's beautiful.
Oh.
And so, applauders, thank you for listening to that. And now we should discuss Little Shop of Horrors. Top of the charts. What brought you to this fine film?
It was the podcast. We needed something. And I was like, you know what? You know what would be great to do? A musical. Not like that movie musical that they did of Les Mis recently with Russell Crowe.
That's a little heavy.
Yeah. Anyways, I wanted something fun and I wanted a musical. So we decided on Little Shop of Horrors because it's a fun musical.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I did not realize how much fun it was, but I mean,
the more you stare into the mouth of the beast, literally or figuratively, it's an amazing production.
Can I just like clap for that metaphor?
They do all these gratuitous mouth shots.
It's not just the mouth shots, but you know the mouth and the beast. Anyways, sorry.
You like that?
It was good. It was okay, good. It was good.
I hope to pull a few more of those out of the hat for you. Yeah.
I'm so glad that I saw this movie. I feel like my life has improved.
Yeah.
Because I've watched this movie. And it's not like by a large degree. It's not like, you know, finding people that, you know, fulfill you on an emotional level. But this fulfills me on an emotional level. I'm just saying.
This movie isn't my life mate, but I'm glad I had a relationship with them in college. Mm-hmm. Because it helped me know myself.
Right.
Are you saying that this is the first time you've watched this film?
This is the first time I've watched this film.
No!
Yes. Oh, yes.
I've watched it since like junior high. Every year or two, I rewatch it. I downloaded the soundtrack after Jonathan and I went and watched it in the theater. We saw a theatrical production of it in like 2014. And I downloaded the soundtrack and I will admit that only just now when we rewatched the film was I like, oh, I've been listening to the theater soundtrack and not the movie soundtrack.
That's okay.
It's fine because I know the dentist song that you don't know.
No, I don't know that song. I do know the basic premise of the movie and the story. Mm. But my very first like interaction with it was at, there was this, a big tribute to Cameron Mackintosh, one of these like big, big Broadway producer. Mm. And he produced this on Broadway at one point. And so they were doing this big, like musical tribute and you have Ellen Green coming in and singing Somewhere That's Green. And I just fell in love with that song. And I mean, I kind of fell in love with it again the next time I watched it because of more reasons.
I'm fangirl facing it, Lydia. Yes. Right now. I can't help it. I'm like,
it's so good. It's so good.
Okay.
When I watched it, knowing the little bit that I knew that there was a guy who had this, you know, carnivorous plant that ate people. Mm-hmm. When I saw Ellen Green's performance, I was like, I mean, she's such a powerhouse and it's a wonderful performance. And mm-hmm. It makes me feel just like with how she delivers it.
She's so sincere.
Right. You want her to just be happy mm-hmm. for the rest of the movie, for the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
But I had very specific thought process that I wanted to bring up. So
do you want to start off with that? I wanted to tell you that my first real intimate connection to this production was a mixed tape that I got in junior high. I'm gonna say eighth grade. My friend Tina, who I know recorded this cassette tape from a tape mm-hmm. she had.
Yeah.
I doubt it was a DVD.
I know exactly what she probably did.
She hit record and held the thing up to the thing.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful mixtape. I listened to it nonstop. I memorized every song on it. But the one that always got me was Suddenly Seymour.
Mm-hmm.
It's my jam.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
And I can sing it by heart from the top, both male and female parts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super down.
Good.
Okay. out of context song loving.
But it kind of fits, you know, with what we're talking about. But my thought process with knowing that there's this guy and he feeds people to this, you know, carnivorous plant, when Audrey comes on and she says, I know Seymour is the greatest. I don't do voices.
I know Seymour's the greatest.
And my thought process is like, okay, so she's in a relationship with Seymour. And then she continues with,
but I'm dating a semi-sadist.
Okay, that makes sense. He feeds people to a plant.
So I got a black eye and my arm's in a cast.
Whoa, 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 whoa. What is this guy doing to this poor woman?
Like, still, that Seymour is a cutie.
And then she goes on and she goes on. I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, if she's in a good relationship with Seymour, at this point, she's just spoilers. She's not in a relationship with Seymour at this point. But I'm just like, why? Okay, I kind of feel for her and I really want things to work out between her and Seymour. And you know what, guys? They do. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm so glad I watched this movie because that whole thought process, I just crumpled it up, threw it out the window, and I'm never going to think about it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. So,
that's my background on the movie.
I'm super into it. I'm glad that we both love this movie.
Yes.
Because it's, I mean, we're supposed to be shocked and applaud. We should be equally horrified and be like back and forth on the thing. But like,
I'm not horrified by anything in this movie.
I got some reasons why. I'll share it towards the end of the episode.
Yes.
But,
yes.
But I think we should start. Green, yeah. Green title screen.
Green title screen. A Geffen Company Pictures. I think that's what it says.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Anyways. And then we get opening text scroll.
Very a la Star Wars.
Yes. Do you want to know? Because I paused and I wrote down the entire thing. Would you like me to perform it for you?
I would like you to perform all the things for me.
On the 23rd day of the month of... Oh, sorry. I want to do a callback to our last episode. On the 23rd day of the month of September.
Ooh.
In the early air of the decade, not too long before our own.
I don't know. They hum in the background. And I don't want to mess up your recording.
No,
that's
with okay.
That. Whatever.
The human race suddenly encountered a deadly threat.
A deadly threat?
Deadly threat. It's the loons.
Sorry. The loons, you say.
And the terrifying enemy surfaced, as such enemies often do, in the seemingly most innocent and unlikely of places.
Evil aliens plants potting soil is in Estonia.
Oh, this is why I love our podcast. Callbacks and references to ourselves. Yes, we reference ourselves.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Okay.
And then we get our opening number.
Our title sequence.
Yeah, you know what it's called?
The title sequence. It's the title of right. The movie.
Yeah. Little shop of horrors. Little shop of terrors.
Which is, of course, sung by our gorgeous chiffon,
Crystal,
and Ronette.
Yes. Crystal is played by, and I apologize for any names I'm going to butcher, Tichina.
That's what it sounds like. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. Tichina Arnold. That's the lady who plays Crystal. Ronette is played by Michelle Weeks. And chiffon is played by Tisha Campbell.
On IMDb, it's Tisha Campbell Martin.
Tisha Campbell. Thank you. We see these three characters throughout the entire movie. There are background singers.
Yes, but on IMDb, they said that it's a Greek chorus.
Oh, yeah.
Which made me think of exactly Hercules.
Right.
Those
the Muses.
Oh, I love the Muses.
Yeah.
And so they play a dual role. They are also street characters in like regular street clothes and regular part of the cast. But for the majority of the film, they are this chorus that kind of doo-wops their way in and out of every expositionally sort of driven part of the film.
Right.
They're named after three different bands. That's the Ronettes and the Chiffons, and then I think they're called the Crystals.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
Then after that song plays out, we go into this plant store called Mushnik's, and we see Seymour, who's played by the wonderful Rick Moranis.
Oh, Rick Moranis.
He's cleaning up and
he's putting stuff on a shelf and he's on a little stool.
Yeah. And then things don't stay on that shelf because that shelf is not properly installed.
No, they did not follow the IKEA instructions on that one. And I think it's a big shelf. Like, it's not like it's a big shelf. It's not like when you think, oh, a random shelf on a floor, on the wall in the basement, right? You think of like a, I mean, I don't know about you, but I think of like a 4-foot shelf, right? This thing is full, like 7 feet long. It's almost the entire wall, and it's covered with plants.
Mm-hmm.
Like 12 or more plants.
Mm-hmm. And it's probably like, what would you say, like 6 inches wide?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you already say that?
No.
Okay.
No. I said 7 feet long. Yeah. You said 6 inches wide. You guys got dimensions now. Hey, you want to know a third one? It's probably half an inch thick.
Yeah. Because we live in the third dimension.
Yeah, we do.
For
we do.
Anybody who is living in the second dimension and hears this podcast for some reason?
I don't know. Is sound a different dimension than... I don't... Okay, sorry. All right, sorry.
Sound a different... never mind.
Here's the thing. Like, if you're if you're a two-dimensional creature, you can't see three dimensions.
Right.
If you're a one-dimensional creature, you can't see two.
Right.
We're three-dimensional, so we can't see fourth and beyond.
Right. So would two-dimensional... I did not mean to throw us for a loop.
I'm so sorry.
Anyways, so he crashes and burns, and also all of these plants fall on his bed.
Oh, yeah. Seymour, what are you doing down there? Or whatever he says.
Yeah. And
that's Mushnick calling from upstairs because Seymour lives below the shop.
And Mr. Mushnick is played by a guy by the name of Vincent Gardenia,
who is convinced that he was only hired because his name was a flower.
I would not. I mean, that's a fair assessment.
Would you put that past Frank Oz, our dear director?
No, I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
He's a whimsical guy, that Frank Oz.
Yeah.
If you don't love him, I mean, what are you doing with your life? I feel like I should read his biography.
He has a biography?
I mean, probably.
He should. If he does not have a biography, he should.
Yeah.
Someone get on that.
And I would read that.
Yeah.
So, multiple dimension talk and
Frank
probably
Oz.
Existing autobiography talk.
Okay, we skip past that. I did want to say one last thing before we move on to the next scene, or the next shot in the scene, is that when Seymour is cleaning off his bed, he does the most practical thing, and he just like sweeps everything off of his bed, just as a cleaner. That seems like the most practical thing, and I applaud him for it.
He's gonna have to sweep the floor anyway. Just mm-hmm. brush. This is the thing that I tell people when I'm dusting their houses. I'm like, I'm gonna dust your house, and then I'm gonna vacuum it. So when you watch me knock all of this shit onto the floor, just know that I'm gonna go over and vacuum it up. It's just I don't want to like get a handful of your like dead rose petals and mm-hmm. then walk to the trash and then go and
right.
then go like yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I'm gonna vacuum anyway.
Right.
Put it on the floor. He's gonna have to sweep the floor anyway.
Right.
Put it on the floor.
Yeah. So then we see a woman crossing the street from a building to the plant shop.
Yeah, it's Kitty Corner. She lives right mm-hmm. across the street.
Right. And she's greeted by Mr. Mushnick, who indicates that she's late. And, you know, they do that whole like exposition, like, oh, it's close to closing time and you haven't been here and all that stuff. So,
yeah. He starts to berate her for being late, but telling to his character, once he notices that she has a black eye, he's actually
concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for a character that I mostly write off as a douchebag, especially if you know the Mushnick and Son song from the musical. Which comes up later. All the songs I remember from the musical, I will sing to you a little bit.
I feel like I should listen to the theatrical soundtrack.
It's good. It's good because it's got the songs that this one doesn't. But he's really kind of a dirtbag character all around. So the fact that he's just like, Audrey, what's up with your eye?
Mm-hmm.
Like
the woman's name is Audrey, and she is played by Ellen Green, by the way.
And we love her.
She is wonderful. She's a powerhouse. I have a nice little roundabout of her later because I think she's so wonderful.
Good. I can't wait to hear it. I can't wait to knock the microphone. And okay. I can't wait to hear about Ellen Green more.
And I do like when Mr. Mushnick is concerned for her. He's just like, you know, I think that boyfriend of yours is not good because she has a black eye. So,
yeah.
He's concerned. So, and oh, he also calls him a greaser.
Does he?
I love that. This is like a very, like, it came out in, like, this movie came out in
1986. No, you're right. It's 86.
86, but there's this all these callbacks to the 50s, and it's just wonderful like that.
Well, because the movie, I think, is supposed to be set in 1960.
And so Seymour comes up with a bunch of these clay pots, and then he trips and crashes and burns for a second time.
Seymour, what are you doing to the inventory?
and Audrey kind of defends him, and she's just sort of like, you know,
I'll help him clean it up before any customers come in, Mr. Mushnick.
And Seymour says that Audrey looks radiant and actually asks her if that's new eye makeup.
Yeah, he doesn't recognize this as a shiner. He just thinks she's pretty all the time.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah.
He's so wonderful.
True love will do that to you.
Yeah.
It'll make you look past a lot of eye boogers.
And there's like a bunch of expositional dialogue about how, you know, the store isn't making money and like nobody's coming in and it's almost closing time. And they, oh, that's what it is. They, I think they have like.
Do you have song cues in your notes? Like
I do.
Okay, good. So I was like, gosh, I don't want to skip talking about Skid Row at all.
Right, right. Because, and that's what I was thinking. I was like going past Skid Row. And why would I go past Skid Row? It's a great song.
Yeah.
So anyways, we see Mr. Moshnick talking about while they're cleaning up the pots, you know, talking about how nobody's coming in and, you know, we're close to closing time. And he's like shooing away Crystal, Ronette and Chiffon and says, you know, you need to go ahead and you need to do something good with your life.
Why aren't you in school?
Right.
We're on a split shift. We went to school till fifth grade. Then we split.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh no.
And he's like, how are you supposed to better yourselves? And she's like, better ourselves? Did you hear that? He said, better ourselves. Mister, when we're from Skid Row, there ain't no such thing. And then it goes into this theme. It goes,
alarm goes off at 7. Okay.
It's so good. It's so good.
It's so good.
Oh.
Okay. Here's the thing you need to know about Skid Row. Bertice Reading is the lady who starts off the alarm goes off at 7 a.m. Okay. This was her last performance, I believe. This was her last movie. And so, like, I think she died in 1990. So, I mean, there was time. It's like, it's not like she didn't get to see her production like that lady from Monty Python, mm-hmm. who was darling. But like, she's just an incredibly powerful singer. And when she sings these first couple lines, and then the, what should we call it? Should we call them the Greek chorus? Should we call them?
Yeah, we could call them the Greek chorus.
Yeah, because I don't think they have a specific name. I don't remember a specific name for the trio.
Not as a group. I just kept referring to them as Crystal, Ronette, and Chiffon in my notes.
Crystal, Ronette, Chiffon. That's a lot of syllables to be like, and then the chorus comes in.
CRC. We could call them CRC.
All right.
Crystal, Ronette, Chiffon. Yeah.
Okay, CRC.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. Bertice comes and sings the first couple lines, and then you see CRC come and surround her on either side, two on one side, one on the other, and they look so admiring to an incredible performance by this woman that, like, if your heart isn't pulled out of your chest into this film, I mean, okay, in 30 Rock, when Jack Donaghy is asked if he likes Phil Collins, he's like, I got 2 ears and a heart, don't I? Right? I love that line. But also, yeah, if you're not compelled by this performance, if you're not immediately in it, then maybe you're not a fan of musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you sold your soul somewhere along the line and forgot to keep the receipt.
Both are valid assumptions.
Yeah. I love her so much.
Yeah. And it's a good song. You see like all these different people from Skid Row coming in and they're singing different parts. Like,
it's easily the biggest crowd scene. You see the most right. people. The cast goes real small after that. I mean, the biggest scenes after this have like crowds of reporters, but you don't get more than 6 or 7 in the shot. And this is, I mean, at the culmination of this song, there's, what, 30 people?
Right,
something
right.
crazy. It fills up the entire screen.
Yeah, and like, but you see all these different moments where different people are like standing up. I think at one point for me, it felt like it was going to like go into a rendition of Les Mis.
Oh yeah,
which I know I talked about Les Mis earlier, but I could talk about it for the rest of my life.
but not on this podcast.
No. But it felt like at one point they were going to bring out the barricades and everything because like it was just everybody was like living in the dregs of society.
Yeah.
And the song.
It's visually, it's very dark. I mean, the entirety of this movie is fairly dark for being a comedic musical.
Mm-hmm.
But this visually is like, hey, things suck here and we expect them to suck and all of the sucking is going to happen. And let's describe to you in detail all the suckitude.
Right. And they like some of the lyrics are like talking about how you work from 9 to 5. You know, was it one of them about the bosses come and break your hearts and that sort of stuff?
Yeah. Eating all your lunches from the hot dog cart.
Yeah.
The bosses take your money and they break your hearts. I've got this one memorized too.
Right. At one point they say the jobs are really menial and you make no bread. And then at 5 you head by Subway. That was like the end of it. Sorry, never mind.
Oh, well, in the musical, it goes,
it's different from.
Yes, this is the thing. I memorized the musical soundtrack, mm-hmm. and all through this movie, like we started busting out in song together.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, I'd be like, "Oh, I don't know that lyric. What did I do?" And in the oh my goodness, my in the musical is your in the book. Okay.
I totally just left so hard in there.
Sorry. In the musical, it says, It says at the end of the day, you buy your token and you go downtown. It doesn't say subway. And I right. think they, and in, I, when I first memorized it, like I thought they were like, you buy your toke, like smoking weed or something. Like you, mm-hmm. you get off work and you buy some pot and then you go home. But then at one point I was like, oh, you buy your token and go downtown. That makes more sense.
Right.
I'm not in a subway culture. So sorry.
Well, I don't know if they do tokens now. Maybe they do it more on like a card.
Well, this is 1960, so I yeah. think they had tokens.
Yeah. And we hear things like Audrey has a little bit of a solo where she talks about how
both she and Seymour have a solo.
Yeah. And Aubrey's is short, but Seymour's is more like giving you backstory on him.
Poor. All my life, I've always been poor. I keep asking God what I'm for. He tells me, gee, I'm not sure. Sweep that floor, kid. Oh, dun, dun, dun.
That's great. That's great. That's great.
I was telling Lydia that I have, I love this musical so much that I have a who I am in every scene and it's different for each scene. So this scene, I'm totally Seymour.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good. Okay. That's good. And then they like, there's this like very, at the very end, like everybody in Skid Row kind of comes down talking about like how they got to get out of Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's when the song ends.
Ba-dum-bum.
And, we see Seymour, Audrey, and Mr. Mushkin doing nothing for like three different
Mushnik.
Mush, oh, sorry.
Mushkin sounds like his Pokemon avatar.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me.
Mushkin, I choose you. I'm broke. That's what he says. I'm broke. Mushnik. It's a cute little montage, though, that happens.
Yeah, yeah. There are three shots indicating that nobody is coming into the store. It's a nice way to kind of show the passage of time.
Yeah, they shoot at the clock and it's just after 5 o'clock, I think.
Right.
And then they do that cut shot thing where, like, you show people being super bored. So one's at the desk and one's at the register and one's kind of standing to the side. And then they switch places and one's playing with a deck of cards and one is, like, looking at his fingernails. And
yeah.
You can tell that they are not working hard at work.
Right, right. For anybody who's ever had, like a period of, like, downtime at work where, like, nothing happens and it's, like, seasonal downtime, this is kind of, it's an easy way. It's an easy place to relate. That sort mm-hmm. of
scene. It's a Sunday morning working at the mall sort of feeling.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, some mall walkers and pregnant ladies? Okay. I'll just stand here and stare at wreaths.
Yeah. I think I had that job. Not with wreaths, but it was different. Anyways.
We both worked at the same mall at different times.
Oh, we did, didn't we? Guys, Naomi and I have known each other a really long time, and, like, there are moments where our lives just intersect.
But I'm born and bred Federal Alien.
Federal Alien?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, and then now I live in Tacoma, but Federal Way will always be my hometown. I mean, it's only 12 minutes away, but still. Like,
yeah.
So, like, the fact that our lives overlap a little bit.
It's great.
It's really good. Didn't you take me and Jonathan's pictures when I was all like an uppity senior in high school? And I was like, me and Jonathan are getting our pictures taken together. And we had all these really super cringy pictures taken where we're like, and you can't see me doing the gesture, but it's very like, oh, Zen, hand to hand. Like,
oh, yes, I
do. You take those pictures?
I remember those pictures.
There's one of them that we refer lovingly to as the tantric sex picture. Maybe I should post it to Patreon. It's not dirty. These are name redacted Sears Portrait Studio pictures. I mean, if it has to be. I don't know.
I mean, I don't care.
The Sears is gone now. What are they going to do? And they can't take back my weird, cringy senior high photos.
I was like, for a minute there, I was like, well, I did work at a portrait studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you talked about that pose, I was like, oh, yes.
Yeah, because it was like, I mean, here's the thing. The photos are beautiful. But when I was like, let's do these poses, like, oh, my God, they're terrible.
I was an okay photographer.
You were and are a phenomenal photographer. The subject matter was the issue. And it had a weird energy, too, because I was like this high school student who, or maybe just out of high school. And I was like, I'm going to come to you and get pictures done. And you were like, an employee, so you're like, yeah. And then but I knew you, so I was like, okay, it won't be so bad. And I went out and I like picked an outfit, and I had Jonathan pick an outfit. God, I was so extra back in the day. But Jonathan pick an outfit. Then I went and had my hair done.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to sit for an hour and wait for the appointment time to come up. And at some point, so I'm sitting downstairs in mom's old basement, and I'm watching TV, and Abraham comes by and kind of uncharacteristically, but in a loving way, gives me a noogie when I'd had my hair professionally done.
Oh.
And I was like, what did you do? And like, I got super frustrated and I was nervous. So I was like super sweaty. I had my makeup done. My hair was like, I had that, cause this was like the early 2000s or 1999. And I had the zigzag part that was so,
oh, yeah.
I can't do that to myself. I could not comb that into my hair. So the person had done it. And then Abe like noogied me right on my zigzag part. So I'm like sweaty. My makeup's weird. My outfit's all like, I want it. When I get super fancy, sometimes I put on too many layers. So like I had like three layers on and I'm like, so we take me and Jonathan to the Sears portrait studio. And they make us do these poses that are so bad. And it was nothing to do with you because the pictures are beautiful. It's that I'm like, let's hold hands like we're mirroring, exercising each other. Let's lean in like we're not 19 and 20 respective year olds, like having this mom and pop portrait done at Sears. I'm so sorry. That was an entire rant, but like it needed to be said. I'm thankful that you got to be part of that.
This is so...
I don't remember where we're in the film.
Okay, so back to the film.
So sorry, guys.
Oh, this is great. This is why I love doing the podcast.
I'm going to have to show you that picture.
I remember that picture very vividly.
I think I know where it is. I'll show it. Yeah, okay. So anyways. If you don't want to see it again, I can see why you wouldn't want to revisit it.
It wouldn't be because of you. It would be because of other reasons outside of that session. So anyways,
okay,
never mind.
But we don't have to revisit it. That's the point of the podcast, Lydia. Sometimes we talk about the things, but we don't have to physically go revisit them.
I distinctly remember that picture, so I'm revisiting it in my mind right now.
And then we can leave the rest of it behind.
Yeah, yeah. So Mr. Mushnick is like, oh, nobody's shown up and we got to close. And I'm just thinking we're going to have to close down the shop altogether.
Mr. Mushnick, you don't mean. I don't remember what she says, but
yeah,
she's like, oh, no. And she's like, she's very reactionary. I love that about her.
Yeah. And so, Audrey is like, she's like kind of eyeing Seymour, like, you know, you should tell him.
I think you should take the firm in a new direction.
Yeah. And then
he like, Mushnick turns around and is like, what? And Seymour's like, frozen.
Right. And Audrey steps in and she's just sort of like, you know, all those weird plants that Seymour gets. And she's like, go get the plant, Seymour.
The plant you're working on.
Right. And she like does this whole big spiel.
Really?
Yeah. It's great. She is proud of herself by the end of that speech.
She does a fantastic job. She, I might point out to you, is like the only truly heroic character in the entirety of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And she advocates for someone who she's either not interested in or like really close friends with. She's just a coworker, right? Mm-hmm. But she likes him, but not likes him. She thinks about him sometimes, apparently, but like she doesn't ever think something's going to come of it. And so she's just like, you know, this place where I work, and she has another job somewhere else. So like she's really advocating for the best for everyone. I mean, where's Seymour going to live if he doesn't have that basement? And what's Mushnick going to do if he doesn't have his long held business or whatever? She's like really stepping up, and I'm like super impressed by her like all the time.
All right. And so what they're talking about is displaying a strange plant in the store that attracts people and has them come in so they buy more plants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you have an interesting plant in the window, people are going to come in and talk about it.
Right. And Mushnick's just sort of like, I don't know. And Seymour brings out the plant. And there's this POV shot from the plant, which we see that one other time in the film. And I'm very grateful for it.
And they all peer down at it. And it's a really sad selfie angle.
Yeah.
But it's lovely.
And so Mr. Mushnick doesn't know. And
doesn't Seymour just put it in the window?
Yeah. Well, he does say, you know, I don't know what kind of a plant it is, but it's
not in any of my books.
Right. So Seymour says, I call it an Audrey too.
To me.
I hope you don't mind.
That's not really great.
Do you want to try it again?
I'm not really good at high-pitched noises because I'm a total, the second one, not.
you're a soprano, not an alto.
I'm an alto, not a soprano.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, it's good, but it's
just this cute little soprano squeak.
It's so cute, and you can tell she's not like offended. She's very happy.
They modeled the lips on the baby Audrey too to be her lips. So naming it Audrey 2 isn't just like him fawning after her. It's him being like, no, I really did. I gazed upon this wonder and I thought of you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how much? I mean, Seymour is just so wonderful. Rick Moranis has always kind of been adorable mm-hmm. in this geeky way. Mm-hmm. But like the first thing I ever saw him in was Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So he was always adorable as like a dad. Watching this movie, he's adorable as a love interest.
Uh-huh.
Really attractive.
Yeah, he's got dating Gina in Ghostbusters levels of appeal in this.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I can't tell you how much I'm so glad that I saw this movie. It's so good.
If for nothing else, to elevate your appreciation.
Of Rick Moranis. Yeah. Mr. Mushnick is not convinced and starts to, you know, break down their idea, and they put the plant into the window, and then suddenly, who arrives but
Christopher Guest
is so good.
He does a guest appearance.
Yeah, and he's like, I saw that. Sorry.
What a strange and unusual plant in your window.
Oh, that is...
Where did you get it?
Yes, and Seymour talks about this...
This is the introduction of the third song, right?
Yeah.
It's called Daru.
Yeah. And so there, it's this whole big flashback about Seymour talking about when he paused, how he found the plant.
Yeah, he just went to a plant shop that he usually goes to when there was a sudden, total, unexpected eclipse of the sun. And then there was that strange plant. We're just sitting there.
Yeah. And he like, he speaks throughout this entire thing, but you hear the music. And then when he pauses, there's that doop, da doop, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I also found it interesting that there was a group of guys, like when Seymour goes and is looking for an interesting plant and nothing shows up, he's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll go. And he walks over to like a group of guys who are just like snapping.
They're called the doo-wop guys. Yeah, they're just called the doo-wop singers.
Right.
So there's four guys, I think, doo-wopping on the corner.
Right. And for me, I thought that they were just like sitting around waiting for a bus. And that's just what you did in this universe flashback.
You just snap and you doo-wop.
Right. Because it looks like Seymour's about to do that. So.
Okay. But you know what?
Yes.
Because I squeaked and pointed at the screen and screamed a little bit. Okay.
Yes.
So one of the doo-wop singers is Danny John Jules.
I have no idea who that is.
I'm going to tell you who Danny John Jules is right
Please
now.
Do.
He's the cat from Red Dwarf. I know! I was so excited. I was like, okay, guys, I was doing the pitiful amount of research that I do before we do this podcast. And I was like, I should probably scroll through the cast list as far as it goes because, you know, I got okay. Sorry, but there's like this white cast and then there's this black supporting cast. And I was like, mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, the CRCs,
mm-hmm.
they're persons of color. And,
right.
and the music is very much of the 60s and this kind of doo-wop and these, mm-hmm.
A lot of the music in the 50s and the 60s was actually based off of like, I mean, even though the more prominent artists are white, a lot of their music was actually based off of, music from, musicians of color.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And Levi Stubbs, mm-hmm. who plays Audrey too.
Right.
I'm sure we'll get into that, but he's of the Four Tops. He's like, in the Music Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And you never see his face. I think he plays a bum in the first scene. The first
Skid Row.
In Skid Row, yeah. He plays a bum. And when I saw the production, I think it's something that people frequently do with this musical is they'll have the person voicing Audrey be in the first scene because it's such a huge crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only time you actually get to see him, and I couldn't point him to you. I pointed to him on the IMDb page, but here's the thing. I was like, I need to at least scroll through and see if there's anybody in the cast that is now famous that maybe I didn't know about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I scrolled through. I mean, two of the CRCs went on to be in Living Color,
mm-hmm.
which was a great show back in the day. And so I was like, I'll just scroll. And then I saw Danny John Jules and I'm like, I am such a dwarfer. I was like, ow! One of his lines in Red Dwarf is, he's a humanoid looking evolution of a cat, so he'll say things like, I'm so excited all six of my nipples are tingling. I'm so fine that it's there's a 6 month waiting period for birds to appear every time that I am near.
Mm-hmm. That's my favorite one that he does.
Okay, so the fact that he's in there, I mean, oh, you probably don't know this because I didn't know this until I looked it up, they filmed in England, so
that makes sense.
So, yeah, of course, they were pulling in stand-ins, lots of English actors that we don't know that they're English because, well, people rarely sing with an accent if they're singing mm-hmm. in English. And so the fact that he's like doo-wopping on the corner, I was mm-hmm. like, da-doo.
It's a really fun
Audrey too.
It's a really fun look, like it's a song.
It's
pretty
much it's the sweetest exposition, I think.
Best way to do exposition in any movie. I think all exposition should always be followed up with small pauses where you have background singers singing do wadu.
Mm-hmm.
He says that the eclipse happens and this like green light, you know, hits the stand, and he, you know, just picks up this plan. The guy running the stand is just sort of like, yeah, I'll sell that to you, even though it wasn't there a minute ago.
For $1.95.
Mm-hmm. Wonder what that is after, you know, inflation. We're checking that out right now.
I might have an inflation thing bookmarked to my phone.
I think that would be like $10 in today's, I mean, from the 1950s. I don't know. I mean, I always overguess.
That's okay.
Maybe it's like five.
Okay. If in 19, we'll say 60, but it's probably 64 or something, mm-hmm. You spent $1.95. Oh my goodness. You know he broke, right? That's $16.65, an inflation of 754%.
$16.65.
Okay, so the movie was made in the mid 80s, but it's set in the 1960s, so it calculated for the 1960s.
Okay, makes sense.
But now I want to put in 86. Because who doesn't like to have fun with inflation calculators? Shut up, you get a hobby.
I'm not laughing at you.
No, you're supposed to. That's the whole point. Okay, in 1986, it's $4.50.
Baha.
Yeah. So, whatever.
That was my Nelson from The Simpsons impression.
I thought it was ha ha.
Oh,
ha ha. Did you say Baja?
Yeah. Maybe more on the Scrooge side.
Okay.
Anyways, and so he takes this plant back home, and then we see them in current day, and Mr. Mushnick's still like, I don't know if this is gonna work,
because the guy turns around. Oh, he's like, that's right, a very interesting story, and then he turns around to leave the store. He's just this random Christopher guest right. appearance has turned around to leave, and he turns around and he goes, hey. While I'm here, I might as well get $50 worth of roses.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, $50? That's so great.
And then he's like, can you break 100? And Mushnick stops mid-cheer and he's like, 100? No.
And he's like, well, that's okay. I'll get $100 worth of flowers.
No, he goes, you're close. Oh. He goes, well, I guess I'll just have to get twice as many.
Which, if you have like a disposable income and you don't want to have to worry about, like, you want the flowers, right?
Mm.
So, I mean, wouldn't it make sense that you would just spend that full $100 if a small shop owner? I mean, I wouldn't mind doing that if I had, you know, disposable income and I wanted to help a small business.
That's true. And I mean, like, and okay, it's obviously a farcical character, but I love buying people flowers. I think my mom has always said to me, I want all my flowers before I'm dead. And so, like, not that she doesn't sound anything like that, but she does say that.
Yeah.
And I think about that often, because I'll bring flowers to somebody and I'll be like, because you're not dead. Because I'm buying for you once you're dead. I'm sorry. You're done. You're cool. You're good. You're fine. All right. Sorry.
Yeah. And then other people come into the shop because of the plant.
Oh, it's a montage now.
Yeah. And so they're all just like, oh, that's a very interesting plant. I'd like to buy some flowers.
Where'd you get that plant?
Yeah.
They're all sticking their head, and they're heavy handed. Oh, no, not maybe heavy. I use that phrase a lot, but they're strongly pushing you to see that Audrey too is the only reason these people are coming in this store.
Right. And so there's this whole big montage of the shop finally making some money.
And it's full of fancy people. They don't look like the people from the Skid Row number at all.
Right. And then when everything is said and done, Mr. Mushnick says, I'm going to take us all out to eat. But Audrey has a date.